and the audio cast is up and running, Stefan.
Great. Thanks, Glenn. Welcome, everyone, to GNSO Council meeting. Has the recording started?
Yes, sir. The recording has started. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. So we'll get started straight away, and we will ask Glenn for you to do a roll call, if possible.
With pleasure, Stefan. Jeff Newman?
Sure, yes. Sorry, yes.
Ching Chow?
Here, present.
Jonathan Robinson is absent, and he has given his proxy to Ching Chow. Mason Cole?
Here.
Yoav Kieran?
Here.
Stefan van Gelder?
Yes.
Thomas Rickett?
Present.
Saeed Jamil? Saeed is
present.
On the line. John Berard has not joined the call yet. Brian Winterfeld?
Present.
David Taylor?
Present.
Osvaldo Nuova has not yet joined the call. Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Yes.
Bill Drake?
Yes.
Wendy Seltzer has not yet joined, nor has Mary Wong. Rafik Damak? Rafik is on the line. He may just be on mute. Joy Lidicard is absent. Thank you, Rafik, and has given her proxy to Bill Drake. Wolfgang Kleinrechter is also absent and has given his proxy to Wendy Seltzer. Lanray Ajayi?
Present.
Carlos Aguirre?
Yes, here.
Alan Greenberg?
Here.
And Han-Chan Lee is absent. And for staff, we have David Olive, Liz Gaster, Rob Hogarth, Margie Malam, Marika Koenigs, Barry Cobb, Olaf Nordling, Alice Janssens, who are representing the Who Is Review Team. And we have Julie Headland, I don't think is yet on the call.
Julie sent her apologies. She's on vacation.
Thank you very much, Liz. And thank you, Stefan. That is over to you.
Thanks, Glenn.
And may I just add to you, Stefan, that all the SOIs for the council are now online in the new form.
Great. Thanks, Glenn. So once again, welcome everyone. A special welcome to those of you joining us at a time that is a little harsh. I'm thinking of our American friends and others who have had to either get up early or stay up late to participate in this call. As usual, that is very much appreciated. So thank you for doing that. As Glenn just mentioned, there are the SOIs have been updated by you all, or by all of us, on the wiki per the new procedures that have been put in place there. So thanks for doing that. If anyone has any updates to an SOI, please say so now. Hearing no updates, does anyone want to review or amend the agenda?
Yes, Stefan Wolf, Ulrich Knoben speaking.
Please, Wolf.
Well, I would like to send to add under AOB a short, brief overview over the draft agenda for Costa Rica.
Okay, no problem. I saw your email on the list to that effect, and please just remind me at the end in case I forget.
Yeah.
Any other requests to review or amend the agenda? Hearing none, you will note the previous council meeting's minutes and the link that you have on the agenda there for those minutes. Thanks to Glenn for taking care of that as usual. Moving on to item two, and there's a link to the pending projects list. Not much change, but I have to confess that I've not had time to review the list since the previous agenda, so we will be updating that for the next meeting. Any comments or questions on there? Hearing none, let's move to item three. And we have liaised with the WHOIS review team, the chair of that team, Emily Taylor, because it's as mentioned in the agenda, there's probably going to be some work for the council to do on WHOIS at some point in the near future. And as WHOIS remains a topic of much interest to the wider world and for the ICANN community, as evidenced by recent letters and communication like the letter sent by the NTIA to ICANN and others, we thought it might be useful to have a discussion, an update from the review team to the council and have a discussion with them so that we could possibly ask questions and have on our radar possible policy developments or other work that may come out of WHOIS work. Now, I know that Emily very kindly accepted to participate in this meeting, but I understand that she's traveling and her participation may be difficult. Have we been able to get Emily on board, Glenn?
She's not on the call, but we have Alice Janssens and Olaf Nordling, who are supporting the review team, and they might have something to say. Thank you, Stefan.
Thanks. So, Alice, Olaf, welcome. Thanks for being with us. Could you possibly, I know that some slides have been sent to the list. Can you give us an update?
Hello, this is Olaf, and hello, everybody. I wonder if, in the absence of Emily, whether Kathy Kleiman, who is the vice chair, if she has been able to join.
She's not on the call, Olaf.
All right. Well,
has she been sent the details to call in?
Yes, she has. So that was the fallback option, but, well, I suppose the third fallback option or whatever would be that we try to give a brief introduction to the slides, which I think Marika is uploading right now. So this is the WHOIS policy review team. I think I can keep it pretty short on the introduction. This is one of the four affirmation of commitments reviews mandated as of the AOC, and it started in October 2010 without a specific deadline for it, but a voluntary deadline set for around about the end of 2011. The composition, as you may be aware, is from across the community, including the ICANN community and also including law enforcement agency representatives and independent experts in various matters. There is a scope of work and a roadmap which you can access and check out for yourself. And now to the substance matter, which is the draft final report published on the 5th of December last year with a number of appendices which you may not have seen if you looked at upon it from the very start, but they've been added later on. And this is up for an extended public comment period which closes only on the 18th of March. And the final report, which will be based on the comments received, is aimed for being published at the end of April. Very, very briefly about the findings from the review team. First of all, the finding that it was difficult to find the WHOIS policy. It's scattered in many documents. There is no clear overall WHOIS policy. And also that the developments of the WHOIS policy has been comparatively slow, and new ways need to be tried, and also communities outside the GNSO need to be included in that kind of development. A finding that policy and implementation have not kept pace with the real world, and also there is a lack of accuracy in many of the WHOIS entries, quoting a study saying over 20%, making it impossible to reach the registrar. Also, the users of WHOIS have, as a consequence, including law enforcement agencies, have severe difficulties finding those who are responsible for the website. Further on the findings, so the policy with respect to the particular privacy and proxy services is particularly unclear and must be clarified and codified. It's also finding that an ICANN has neglected to respond to the need of the community regarding the accuracy and in response times for access and action. The current implementation, as a consequence, does not help to build consumer trust, and more could be done also to raise the awareness of among the users of this service and to improve its user friendliness. Last but not least, among the findings, here briefly abridged, is that the ICANN compliance department would need more resources, and there have been exchanges of letters to that effect as part of the appendix. Appendixes.
Hello, it's Emily. I've managed.
Hello,
to
Emily.
Network.
Could you, sort of
well,
take over, would be
well,
much more appropriate.
Well,
Olaf,
I would be very happy.
The WHOIS review team doing it rather than having support staff just trying to channel your findings.
Well, can I just say that I'm on a train with lots of tunnels, so. And I'm not in the Adobe room. So if you wouldn't mind, Olaf, just running through the slides, I think that's going to be the least disruptive. But I'm very happy to just make a few comments and obviously answer any questions that the council members may have. Can I just say, sorry to interrupt, but thank you very much to the GNSO Council for opening up this slot for the WHOIS review team. We're really keen to have your views and your guidance on the draft report. Particularly, we have asked for input on the timings and who should be tasked with various recommendations, but obviously, of course, on the substance itself. So can I hand over to you, Olaf, to run through the slides? And I will just be here and dialing back in when I lose connectivity to answer any questions.
Emily, before you start, Emily, this is Stefan, just to welcome you. Thank you for making this effort. I know it's not easy on the Eurostar, so well done, and thanks for doing that. I'm sure we will have some questions. We'll run through with Olaf, as you suggested, and if your connection cuts out, can I ask a member of the GNSO Council support staff to make sure that the essence of any questions that we have are captured so that we can send them to the review team and Emily if we lose connection?
I think that's a very sensible approach, Stefan. Thank you very much. Because I'm just about to go into another tunnel now, so I think it might be necessary. But thank you, and thank you, Olaf, for stepping in to do the slides. Much appreciated, as ever.
Olaf,
thank you, Emily, and it's an honour to continue. There are 20 recommendations, and I'll enumerate those. The first one is a recommendation to have a single WHOIS policy in a single document that can be referenced easily and be complete, inclusive of all the policies. And second recommendation is on the data, who is data reminder policy, that should include metrics to track the impact and metrics to inform the published performance targets over time to improve, to facilitate improvements. Also, find an or possibly an alternative to improve data quality. Thirdly, that WHOIS should be considered a strategic even priority from NICAN perspective, which has a number of consequences, including allocating sufficient resources to have a fully resourced compliance department and acting proactively and encourage culture of compliance, and to have a senior executive responsible for overseeing the compliance. Fourth, to perform outreach on WHOIS policy issues to increase the user awareness, and that would not only be limited to the ICANN circles, but go widely beyond that. On data accuracy, since that seems to be a deficiency today, we have appropriate measures to reduce the number of unreachable WHOIS registrations, and with targets set to 50% within 12 months and another 50% over the following 12 months, and also to have an accuracy report that focused on the measured reduction and on an annual basis. So this, that was six. On seven, which is on data accuracy, to have an annual status report on progress towards achieving the goals defined, to publish by time the next WHOIS review team starts, as a base line for them to act upon. And of course it needs to be statistically significant, so include tangible and reliable figures. Further on data accuracy, number eight, there should be a clear and enforceable chain of agreements with the registries and the registrars, and the provision and maintenance of accurate WHOIS data should be clearly required, and it should be enforceable and with graduated sanctions, including deregistrations and deaccreditation. Further, number nine on data accuracy still, these requirements should be widely and proactively communicated over the community, and the registrant's rights and responsibilities document should likewise be circulated widely. Now we come to data access on privacy services. They should include clear and enforceable requirements, of course should be consistent, and strike an appropriate balance between the various interests. Include the privacy, law enforcement, and the close to law enforcement industry. With a number of more detailed requirements, I know we've got very short time for this presentation, so I won't dwell on those. Rather continue to 11, which is data access for privacy services. There as well, there should be graduated and enforceable series of penalties. And a clear path to deaccreditation for repeated and by serious breaches of the requirements. On 12, on proxy services, there should be a facilitation of the review of existing practices by reaching out to the proxy providers to get their support for this, and create a discussion which sets out the current processes clearly. 13, still on the same. The registrars should be required to disclose their relationship with retail proxy service providers to ICANN. On 14, the voluntary best practice guidelines for proxy services, which should strike an appropriate balance and include the privacy industry and the law enforcement agencies and so forth. There are details about what those guidelines may include, and I won't enumerate those. You can read for yourself. We go to 15. There should be an activity to encourage and incentivize the registrars to interact with the retail service providers that they actually adopt the best practices that have been agreed upon. And on WHOIS policy, referring to the first recommendation, should be included then in the policy document, include an affirmative clarifies that proxy means a relationship in which the registrant is acting on behalf. Clarify that the WHOIS data is that of the agent, and the agent alone obtains all rights and assumes all responsibility for the domain name. Common interface is the subject for next recommendation, where there are two alternative formulations. The first is to improve access to the WHOIS data of .com and .net GTLDs, the only remaining thin registries, and for that ICANN should set up an interface website to provide thick WHOIS data for them. And the alternative exposed for public comment, ICANN should set up a dedicated such interface to allow unrestricted and public access to accurate and complete WHOIS information for thick WHOIS data for all GTLD domain names. So there is a two-prong approach on recommendation 17. Now recommendation 18. And this is recommendation to task a working group within 6 months to finalize on international domain name, internationalized domain names, finalize encoding and modifications to data model and internationalized services to give global access to gather, store, and make available internationalized registration data. To make them more accessible and clearly accessible to the WHOIS user. To report no later than 1 year from the establishment to use existing IDN encoding. And aim for consistency of approach across the GTLD space, and also incentivize on a voluntary basis the same for a similar approach for the CCTLD space. More on internationalized domain names in recommendation 19, where the final data model and services should be incorporated and reflected in registrar and registry agreements, and that should happen within 6 months of adoption by the working group's recommendation by the board. And also some ancillary provisions in case this cannot be achieved in time. Further on IDNs, recommendation 20, we're reaching the end after this catalog area. Requirements for registration data accuracy and availability in local languages should be finalized along with the effort on internationalization of registration data and there should be metrics to measure accuracy and availability of data in local languages, and, if needed, corresponding data in ASCII. And compliance methods and targets should be explicitly defined accordingly. Those were the 20 recommendations, but in addition, the review team seeks comments on, well, the acceptable time frames for the implementation, the requirements and suggestions on which department, staff, or within ICANN, or supporting organizations should be tasked with particular recommendations and how to develop those further. Input on all recommendations, and of course with a special highlight on recommendation 17, which is of a two-prong character, and input on efficient mechanisms for monitoring progress in implementing the final recommendations between the completion of this report and the start of the next review team, and any other additional input and notes. For Costa Rica, the review team proposes to meet face-to-face in Costa Rica to discuss the implementation details of the recommendations. And also, there is a note that there will be an overall interaction with the community organized by the review team tentatively on Monday, the 12th of March, to be confirmed. And I think that is. There are numerous links in case you need it enumerated here before. And the closing date for public comments is, as mentioned earlier on, the 18th of March this year. And, well, Emily Taylor is the chair, and I hope she's come out of her tunnel now. No, she has not. And Kathy Kleiman has still not joined, but it's very, very early morning for her. But those are, of course, key individuals for any personal discussions you wish to have. And with that, I think I should conclude the catalog area.
Thank you very much. Thanks for that presentation. I think I'm not sure that whether there'll be questions or not, but I certainly have some. So in the absence of, and I see David has just raised his hand as well, in the absence of perhaps Emily, who's gone back in the tunnel, and Kathy, perhaps we can just put these questions to you and Alice, and as suggested before, write them down. Could one of the GNSO support staff please write them down? And we will continue this conversation with the WHOIS review team, obviously. So I have just a few questions that come out of your presentation, Olof. First of all, on recommendation one, I think that there seems one obvious thing that strikes me, and there's a slight reference to it in recommendation 18, but I didn't see anywhere else any reference to it. What about CCTLDs? I mean, if we're trying to do a single WHOIS policy, surely CCTLD WHOIS is just as important as GTLD WHOIS. Obviously, ICANN has more control over the Gs than the CCs, I understand that. But one of my questions would be, has the review team looked at that and possible ways of including the Cs in this very important work? Olof, Alice, do you want to answer these now, try and answer them, or would you rather I just went through the questions and we put them to the review team?
I think it would be, well, I think I wouldn't do the review team justice in trying to channel answers to the questions. Of course, it has been looked upon. The remit of the review team is focused on the G space, That's pretty clear. But as you mentioned, they have certainly made references and to the CC space as well in one of the recommendations.
Okay, thank you. On recommendation two, I constantly have questions as a registrar from customers asking why we are forced to spam them at least once a year. And I was wondering if there has been any, if the question has been raised in the review team on the actual usefulness of the data reminder policy that has been enforced for a while. But before actually looking at the notices themselves and whether they are improving data accuracy, which is obviously very important, has that question of actually, is it desirable to do this, from the registrant point of view, been raised?
As I can recall, but I think you should to Emily and Kathy by an email or something, that aspect has indeed been raised during the deliberations of the review team.
Okay. Once again, we will collate these questions and others from other GNSO council members, and I will liaise with Emily to send them. So, we understand you may not have complete answers. On recommendation five, the group recommends appropriate measures to reduce unreachable WHOIS registrations. Did the group look at what kind of measures they were thinking of?
Again, not trying to give anything but a hint of an answer. I mean, for example, it was noticed what China had done some time ago and how that dramatically had improved the data accuracy in WHOIS.
Okay. Interesting. And
Gafar?
Sorry, who was that? Did someone speak? Okay. Well, I've already hogged the mic for a while. I've got some more questions, but let me put it out to David and Jeff and then come back. I'll put myself in the queue after Jeff. David.
Thanks, Stefan. No, I was just responding to, I think, the slide before last where the review team was suggesting a face-to-face in Costa Rica, and I thought that seems an excellent idea if we can obviously fit it in on the schedule, which might tie in with Wolf at the end of this session, but that was my only point. It's such an important thing. I think it's worth doing it face-to-face.
Yes, I absolutely agree. It was going to be one of my suggestions as well, and we would have to check with the review team, obviously, as well, what their possibilities are, but doing something over the GNSO weekend, I would be very happy if we could do that. Thanks, David. Jeff?
Yeah, I was going to make a slightly related point, but I also think we should actually meet directly, or this should be a topic with the board itself. I think the WHOIS review team did some great work. My concern is that there's an expectation, and as you saw in the NTIA letter, that once there's a final report, the board's just going to adopt all the findings as is. And I'm worried about some of these recommendations going around the policy development process and also some of these being requirements that I think the review team and some governments expect that the board could just unilaterally implement changes to the contracts with the contracted parties, which they don't have the right to do. And I think there's this expectation in the community that they do have this right because the AOC created this notion of the review team, and therefore the board could just kind of step in and use that as the multi-stakeholder approach and a substitute for policy development within the GNSO. And so I'd like to add this to the board agenda, as that to me is, it's great to have the review team, and some of the recommendations I think are very logical and don't need a policy review, like trying to come up with a unified document and making sure that the community knows what the policy actually is as it exists today. But changes Some of them need to go through the policy development process. Some of them need to go through the process in the registry or registrar agreements to change them. You can't just unilaterally do that just because there's a review team that says that. So that's something I'd like to discuss with the board and make sure that governments and others don't have the unrealistic expectation that the board is just going to unilaterally impose this on the community simply because the review team came and made these recommendations.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks. I think that's a very fair point. I mean, the China question, for example, I think we've all had some kind of a reaction to that. And it certainly should be, in our view, I think, or in my view, certainly as a personal view, it should be taken in the larger context of what China's done with .cn in going from 14 million to 3 million registrations, which I don't think has ever been seen before in the domain name industry. So that zone, that TLD, has had an extraordinary couple of years. So I'm sure the review team needs to look at that in that wider context. David, do you still have your hand up?
I do, but I'll take it down. Sorry.
Okay. So perhaps I can just carry on with my questions and continue to ask Glenn to write those down so we can send them all to the WHO's review team. On recommendation 10, which is one that deals with privacy services, and there's a recommendation there that there be balance between the wishes of law enforcement, I suppose, although I don't see it on the slide, but I suppose it was in the report, on the needs of to protect the individual's privacy and access to personal data. I was just wondering how that balance would be measured, because this argument, you know, if you put law enforcement and individual users in a room, I don't think you'll get much balance out of the conversation. So I'm just unclear as to how that balance can be measured. I agree there needs to be balance. I'm just not sure how we get there.
I think that's the level where there is agreement that there must be some balance. And I won't even try to explore how that can be achieved.
Okay. I just have one more question on recommendation 11 and 17, which is, as you pointed out, Olaf, one that's probably key to the WHO's review team. There's mention on recommendation 11 of de-accreditation for breaches. And then recommendation 17 talks about asking ICANN to do, from what I understand, and I may be wrong, to basically step in and do a kind of proxy thick WHOIS interface because the registry in question has a thin WHOIS. In both cases, I notice there's little onus on registries themselves, and I'm just wondering, is that just not coming through from the slides? On the de-accreditation, are you talking about just registrars or registries as well, if registries that have an obligation to provide a WHOIS service breach it, for example? I don't know if that's been looked at. And on the recommendation 17, why has this not – I don't know that it should be done. I'm not saying it should or shouldn't. I'm just asking myself, reading this, why is it ICANN's responsibility to do a thick WHOIS instead of a registry? Why does the group think that should be up to ICANN? I know VeriSign has some very good reasons for doing a thin WHOIS on .com and .net, so I'm not saying that should change. I'm just asking that question of why, if people think those TLDs should be thick, ICANN should be doing it. That's my questions.
On those two questions, I'll forcefully dodge and ask you to put them to Emily and Kathy for the appropriate answer.
Thanks, Olaf. Thanks a lot for doing this, for being with us. Emily, I don't know if you are back or still in the tunnel, but thank you as well for your time. We will certainly continue this conversation. Wolf, I will ask you to have a look at the possibility of putting in a slot with the review team during the weekend or at some time during Costa Rica. I will also, as I usually do, make the point that all my questions and comments there were my own and not as chair of the council. And with that, just ask if there are any more questions on this or can we move on? Seeing no hands, hearing no one, we'll move on to item four. And once again, thank the review team for their participation in our meeting. Item four is the first motion that we have on the agenda today, and that is a motion looking at the IRTP Part B, the IRTP Part B policy and recommendation 9, Part 2 of that policy. You have seen, I hope, some email traffic on the proposal that staff has submitted with regards to recommendations 8 and 9, Part 2. We're dealing with 9, Part 2 first. We'll go to 8 afterwards. There are a couple of motions made by Mason and seconded by Jeff on those. And the first motion then we will consider now. I'll ask Mason to read the motion, and then we'll discuss it.
All right. Thank you, Stefan. The first motion is on the adoption of staff proposal on IRTP Part B, recommendation number 8. The motion reads, whereas on 24 June 2009, the GNSO Council launched a policy development process on IRTP Part B, addressing the following 5 charter questions. A, whether a process for urgent return or resolution of a domain name should be developed, as discussed within the ESAC hijacking report, with a link to those reports to follow. B, whether additional provisions on undoing inappropriate transfers are needed, especially with regard to disputes between a registrant and admin contact, or AC. The policy is clear that the registrant can overrule the AC, but how this is implemented is currently at the discretion of the registrar. C, whether special provisions are needed for a change of registrant when it occurs near the time of a change of registrar. The policy does not currently deal with change of registrant, which often figures in hijacking cases. D, whether standards or best practices should be implemented regarding the use of a registrar lock status, e.g., when it may not, should, or should not be applied. E, whether, and if so, how best to clarify denial reason number 7. A domain name was already in lock status, provided that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registered name holder to remove the lock status. Whereas this PDP has followed the prescribed PDP steps as stated in the bylaws, resulting in a final report delivered on 30 May 2011. Excuse me. Whereas the RTP Part B working group has reached full consensus on the recommendations in relation to each of the 5 issues outlined above. Whereas in relation to recommendation number 8, the GNSO Council resolved at its meeting on 22 June to request ICANN staff to provide a proposal designed to ensure a technically feasible approach can be developed to meet this recommendation. Staff should take into account the IRTP Part B working group deliberations in relation to this issue. See IRTP Part B final report. The goal of these changes is to clarify why the lock has been applied and how it can be changed. Upon review of the proposed plan, the GNSO Council will consider whether to approve the recommendation. Whereas ICANN staff has developed a proposal in consultation with the IRTP Part B working group, which was put out for public comment with a reference to a link. Whereas comments were received from the intellectual property constituency and though received after the comment deadline were nonetheless considered by the GNSO Council and the proposal was submitted to the GNSO Council. Whereas the GNSO Council has reviewed and discussed the ICANN staff proposal in relation to IRTP Part B Recommendation Number 8, Resolved, the GNSO Council recommends to the ICANN Board of Directors that it adopts and implements IRTP Part B Recommendation Number 8 and the related ICANN staff proposal as described in the link in the motion.
Mason, thanks a lot for doing that. Let me open it up for discussion then. Does anyone want to ask any questions or make any comments? Wolf, and I should point out that, well, Marika, I think you'll probably point this out, that Mason's just read the wrong motion, but not to worry. We will read. Mason, I believe you've read the motion for number 8, recommendation number 8, and we're dealing with number 9 first. But because you've just read that motion, perhaps I can suggest that we swap those two agenda items. I don't know why I drafted the agenda in that way anyway. It's not too logical. But would anyone object to me dealing with number 8 before number 9? So item 5 goes before item 4. Okay, let's hope we haven't confused everybody and ourselves. And so we'll be voting now on the recommendation that, on the motion that Mason's just read, which is motion on recommendation 8. Wolf, you have a question.
Yes, thank you, Stefan. It's just for my understanding. Well, I have followed a little bit the email exchange from staff around those these motions, and I wonder whether this, you know, the resolved which says that it includes staff recommendations, that it refers to that what was the exchange between staff regarding the comments from different party of the community, like the IPC and others. Is this related to that, or just for my understanding, I would like to know that.
Thanks, Wolf. Marika or someone else, can anyone from staff answer this? Marika, please.
Yeah, this is Marika. So the staff proposal that is referenced there is the original proposal that was submitted to the GNSO Council before the IPC made its comments. So it is actually for the GNSO Council to consider whether any changes need to be made to those proposals based on the comments submitted. I did send earlier this week to the list the staff's view on those comments, and I think especially in relation to this recommendation, staff agrees that there might be some merit in considering some of the comments of the IPC. I think there's a specific suggestion where we also would suggest that the registrar stakeholder group is encouraged to provide its feedback on that proposal. So in relation to this specific one, there might be a need to update that proposal if the council agrees with the assessment that staff has made of those comments.
Thanks, Marika. David.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan. I suppose just following up from Marika there, exactly. That the one thing I'm a little bit confused about is on the motion where we talk about the comments, the IPC comments, were nonetheless considered by the GNSO Council and the proposal submitted. I wasn't sure whether we had all considered those. We may have done, but I noticed that, you know, Marika, certainly on our option 2, which we'd proposed there, that she thought it could be beneficial, and exactly as she said, it suggested the registrar stakeholder group could review and respond. And obviously our comments in late, so I mean, it's very hard to review and respond with deadlines and timelines like we've got. So, you know, we're generally for the whole thing, but we just think it's, you know, beneficial, and that's hence we put the options in, and we thrashed those out amongst quite a few IP lawyers. So I don't know how we can build them in or how we take it from here.
Thanks, David. Joab.
Yeah, so I wanted to relate to the same thing. I think the option 2 that was raised there is a good idea. The only thing we would need our group's view on it. So what I'm trying to understand is whether the IPC is asking to change the motion.
David.
Awesome. Very good question. We were putting in our comments because I suppose we thought it would be good if the motion was changed. We're not, and I don't have specific instructions to put in a friendly or anything like that, so you know I can't go any further than that, but we did put in those comments, and when we saw Marika's comments back on it, we thought, oh, good, that's being taken on board, so it would work itself through, I suppose, and we were looking for a registrar response, which we'd then try and run through. So, I don't know. I'm happy to handle it however we think's best to handle it, to be honest.
What I think is that you know, option two, for me, it sounds reasonable, but I've consulted, we didn't have enough time to consult. I've consulted with Stefan Mason. This is something that we need to get our group's review, although I personally think it's okay. There might be different opinions. The only way I see out of this is to defer the motion, and, you know, I'll be happy to hear others what they think about it.
So... there is, I mean, it's possible that we can either defer the motion if there's a request to do that, or once again, the motion itself approves the staff proposal that was made before the IPC comments. So even though those IPC comments are have been identified, and that's very clear, I'm not sure the motion itself pertains to them. So we may consider that moving ahead with the motion is okay, and the IPC comments are there for discussion. I think, Joab, you asked the right question. Does the IPC want to... did the IPC make those comments with a change of motion in mind, and I think this is all happening a bit, there's not enough time for both David to go back to his group, us to go back to ours, so we may just choose to defer. I think those are the options before us, and let me just put the question out there. Is there a desire to defer this motion, or... go ahead and consider it that way. Let's hear from Marika first.
Yeah, this is Marika. I mean, one other option would be as well, if indeed there is agreement that there should be some further consideration of the IPC comments in relation to this specific recommendation, an option could be as well for staff to amend its proposal and include indeed the reference to, I think, the multilingual option, and indeed if there's support from the council for the option two, that could also be worked into a revised staff proposal that, you know, we could submit then for the next council meeting, and I guess this motion could then be updated accordingly. So that would be another option to consider.
Thanks, Marika. And that would mean a deferral then for sure. It would actually probably mean that we take the motion off the table completely for you to redo your staff proposal and then do another motion. Joab, were you still in the queue?
No, sorry. I'll take my hand off.
Okay. Jeff?
Yeah, I just want to comment that... you know, I keep hearing that you should go and talk to the registrars. I believe the staff proposal also involves the registries. It's not just registrars, although the staff response only included a reference to the registrars. I'm happy if you want to remove registries from anything, but I don't think that's the proposal. So can you please include the registries on any of these discussions, especially in light of the Who is review team recommendations that they want to hold the registries more accountable for this. So please consult with the registries as well, unless I've misread the proposal.
Okay, thanks. Alan was next.
Yeah, I think I my suggestion is akin to Marika's, that the motion says that council has considered the IPC comments, which council hasn't done at this point. And so I think the motion needs to be taken off the table since staff is agreeing that maybe they need to make some changes. I don't think this is just a deferral, which, we, you know, especially if it's considered the single deferral that's allowed. It sounds like the motion was premature given the IPC comments and the result of them, and it's got to be taken off the table for staff to consult and perhaps revise the recommendation before it comes back to the GNSO.
Personally, I would agree with you, Mason. You are the proposer here. Would you? What do you want to do? I mean, the discussion that's been happening, does that make you want to change anything or withdraw the motion or whatever's been suggested?
Yeah, I mean, Mason speaking, just given the input here, perhaps the better move would be for me to withdraw the motion and resubmit one that more accurately reflects the status of where we are. So at this stage, Stefan, I would be happy to withdraw the motion for now.
Okay, thanks. So we'll do that. Marika, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, this is Marika. So actually in response to Jeff's comment, because basically staff is basically looking to anyone to, you know, respond to the proposals or the assessment that staff has made of the IPC comments. So the reason why the registrars are specifically mentioned as it would relate to a registrar requirement. So I think we'll be interested to hear from them as well how they see that will be implemented. But we'll definitely would appreciate any input before we make any changes to the staff proposal to really make sure that they have the broad support of the GNSO community.
Thanks. So this motion is withdrawn. I will now ask Mason to go back to item 4 on our agenda and read the motion the motion that's on the motion wiki page, the second IRTP Part B motion. So that is the one that pertains to Recommendation 9, Part 2.
Yeah, I apologize, Stefan, for reversing those. Just chalk it up to being 3 a.m. where I am. All right. This motion is on the staff proposal on IRTP Part B, Recommendation Number 9, Part 2. Okay, whereas on 24 June 2009, the GNSO Council launched a policy development process on IRTP Part B addressing the following 5 charter questions. Whether a process for urgent return resolution of a domain name should be developed as discussed within the ESSAC hijacking report, with links to those reports. B, whether additional provisions on undoing inappropriate transfers are needed, especially with regard to disputes between a registrant and admin contact, or AC. The policy is clear that the registrant can overrule the AC, but how this is implemented is currently at the discretion of the registrar. Whether special provisions are needed for a change of registrant when it occurs near the time of a change of registrar. The policy does not currently deal with change of registrant, which often figures in hijacking cases. D, whether standards or best practices should be implemented regarding use of a registrar lock status, for example, when it may or may not or should not be applied. Whether, and if so, how to best clarify denial reason number 7, a domain name was already in lock status, provided that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registered name holder to remove the lock status. Whereas this PDP has followed the prescribed PDP steps as stated in the bylaws, resulting in a final report delivered on 30 May 2011, whereas the IRTP Part B working group has reached full consensus on the recommendation in relation to each of the 5 issues outlined above, whereas in relation to Recommendation Number 9, Part B, the GNSO Council resolved at its meeting on 22 June to request ICANN staff to provide a proposal for a new provision on locking and unlocking of a domain name, taking into account the IRTP Part B working group deliberations in relation to this issue. See IRTP Part B final report, Recommendation Number 9, Part 2. Upon review of this proposal, the GNSO Council will consider whether to approve the recommendation. Whereas ICANN staff developed the proposal in consultation with the IRTP Part B working group, which was put out for public comment with reference to a link. Whereas comments were received from the intellectual property constituency, and though received after the comment deadline, were nonetheless considered by the GNSO Council, and the proposal was submitted to the GNSO Council. Whereas the GNSO Council has reviewed and discussed the ICANN staff proposal in relation to IRTP Part B Recommendation Number 9, Part 2, resolved, the GNSO Council recommends to the ICANN Board of Directors that it adopts and implements IRTP Part B Recommendation Number 9, Part 2, and the related ICANN staff proposal as described at the link in the motion. That's the motion, Stefan. I would just put myself in the queue for small point of clarification on the motion.
Sorry, please go ahead, Mason.
So I've got in the motion that council has considered the IPC recommendations. As Alan correctly pointed out, that's likely not the case. I probably misworded the motion. What it really should say is that the council has accepted those proposals nonetheless, you know, the deadline notwithstanding. So I don't want any confusion on the part of the wording of the motion.
Should we be changing that then?
I would be happy to change it.
Okay. What's the wording that should be changed?
Well, I would propose that it say that whereas comments were received from the intellectual property constituency and though received after the comment deadline were nonetheless accepted by the GNSO Council.
Okay. Jeff, would you have a problem with that as seconder of the motion? It's a one-word change. Considered,
I don't.
The second to last whereas. Considered becomes accepted.
Yeah, the word accepted is kind of, the only comment I have on that is it makes it sound like the council has been, is incorporating their comments, and I'm not sure is accepted the right word. I mean, I agree with the concept that we even though it's late, but we're considering them. So I guess it's okay if it doesn't convey the notion that that we've accepted them, meaning we accept the substance of them.
Mason?
How about the word received?
Jeff?
Well, don't we say that in the paragraph above it, that they were received?
You're both making valid points. Why don't you just leave it as it is? I mean, it seems to me as though it's clear the comments were received and they were considered.
Well, I'm fine with it how it is. I just don't want any confusion on the part of the council. And I and Jeff, I'm sensitive to your concerns that it not be conveyed that they were accepted as though agreed to. So is there a better word?
What about, I think the way you've drafted it now, Mason, is pretty good. Does anyone else want to comment on this? For example, anyone from the IPC? David Taylor.
Yeah, hi, Stefan. And it's a bit difficult. I think we've certainly got less of a problem with this one, but it's basically what we've said was that the IPC believes that stronger protection should be in place to protect IP holders before ICANN accepts this recommendation. But we didn't set out what stronger protections. So, again, it's there. That's what we thought. That's the comment, which if I don't know how we work this through, if the council is aware of those comments and agrees and says, yes, we agree stronger protections, or do we think that what's in there is insufficient? Our view was that stronger protections should be there before we accept the recommendation. But we, you know, the general recommendation is a good one.
So, do we need more time on this, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika, because I have a question for David, because I don't know if you had a chance to look at the staff's response, because we were wondering if you know the comment was related to the same provision that is in there, because in what is in there currently to protect indeed registrants and indeed avoid that, you know, if you haven't read the agreement or are not aware of the locking provisions, that at least there's a maximum 5-day turnaround time which is required. So from staff's perspective, we thought that would that addresses your concern, but I'm not sure if indeed it does or whether you feel that isn't sufficient as you know what is currently there.
Yeah, and again, we haven't had a chance to consider that officially, so I mean, some of us had looked at it and had individual thoughts, but we haven't got back on that.
I'm seeing some chat traffic that's from the NCSG asking for a vote, but I do wonder if this is not more of the same with the other motion, that we're just slightly not had enough time to really look at this in detail. I don't know. Jeff?
Yeah, I was just going to say that haven't we, by just discussing this right now, haven't we now met what the motion says, where it says the GNSO Council has reviewed and they were nonetheless considered by the GNSO Council? And I don't necessarily agree with the notion that stronger IP protections are needed in that provision. So I think we could just vote and approve the motion as is. I mean, that's my recommendation.
Okay. In this case, I'm told by staff in this instance things are slightly different because there's no recommendation from staff to implement any further changes beyond the staff proposal that's already been submitted. So perhaps we can vote on this one. I am going to ask, is there any opposition to us taking a vote on this motion? Hearing none, I will ask Glenn to proceed, and we will do a voice vote unless there is opposition to doing one. Hearing no opposition, I would ask Glenn that you do a voice vote, please.
Certainly, Stefan. All those in favor of the motion on the adoption of the staff proposal on the IRTPB recommendation 9, please say A.
A.
Is there anybody opposed to this motion? Are there any abstentions? So the motion passes unanimously with those on the call, but may I note that John Berard is not on the call and has not registered a proxy, to the best of my knowledge. And Osvaldo Nova is also not on the call and has not registered a proxy, to the best of my knowledge. If anybody knows differently about John or Osvaldo, would you please say something now so that we can record the vote correctly? Thank you, Stefan. The vote passes. The motion passes.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Thanks to all. Let's move on to item 6 then. And this is an item on the cross-community working group drafting team. We've had a team looking at a possible set of principles for cross-community interaction of the GNSO. We have seen several cross-community working groups start up in the past, and often they have raised questions, sometimes caused issues. So a while ago, the GNSO Council decided to look at possible set of guidelines or principles on how we should engage with that type of a group. The group has come up with a proposal. I want to thank the group for doing that work. And Jonathan Robinson has been leading that effort. He's unfortunately not able to be with us today. But a motion has been put forward on this. It hasn't been seconded yet. So before I read it in Jonathan's stead, I would ask, is anyone willing to second this motion?
This is Jeff. I'll second it.
Thanks, Jeff. Could the wiki please be updated to show? Thank you very much. So I'll read the motion. Whereas the GNSO from time to time has participated in cross-community working groups to address issues of common interest to other ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees. Whereas the GNSO Council desires to develop a GNSO grid perspective with regard to the role, function, and method of conducting joint activities for future projects that respects and preserves the recognized roles and responsibilities assigned to each SO or AC under the ICANN bylaws. Whereas on the 6th of October 2011, the GNSO Council approved a charter and the formation of a drafting team to define a way forward for the effective chartering
functioning and utilization of such cross-community working groups, whereas on 4th of January 2012, the drafting team provided to the Council for consideration draft principles for cross-community working groups link provided. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Jennifer Council hereby approves the draft principles for cross-community working groups for its own guidance and requests staff to disseminate them to the chairs of supporting organizations and advisory committees, asking them to provide input to the Jennifer Council in 60 days on both the principles themselves and the route forward for community-wide adoption or development of a related set of principles for the operation of cross-community working groups. Resolved further that the GNSO Council thanks the drafting team members for their work in developing the draft principles and disbands the team. And with that, I will open it up for discussion. Now, do we have other members of the team on the call? Bill.
Hi. Well, I guess the first point to follow up on this conversation is that NCSG would like to defer this because we are having an internal discussion about the best way forward, and there's a variety of different views. Moreover, since Jonathan's not here, I think it's more appropriate for us to do it when he's around. That said, I'll simply reiterate what I was saying long ago and far away at the early end of this process, which is that, like a number of other people in NC who spoke to it, while I understand the thinking behind the whole initiative and the kinds of concerns that were raised at the time of Jazz, et cetera, I'm still not entirely convinced by the need to specify the requirement for a single uniform charter. And I think that that's the kind of thing that might be viewed by other SOs and ACs as potentially inhibiting or even sort of implicitly imposing, in the view of some people, what we want on them. I still tend to think that it's possible to view cross-community working groups more as a sort of platform where one engages a set of issues in a holistic space, but then people perhaps in different groupings might have somewhat different agendas on particular dimensions that they want to be able to respond to, and I think we ought to have the flexibility for that to happen. So I just wouldn't prejudge the situation by saying up front that that's required. So there was a discussion in the drafting team about some language, some kind of weasel words about where possible or something like that, and I would have thought that that would be useful. Perhaps also it would have been useful to think about if there were situations where there was not a single joint charter at the outset, how exactly things should be conducted. But, again, I recognize that there are a lot of different lines of thinking about this, so it just seems to me better to have a face-to-face discussion in San Jose and see if we can't try and square the circle and also maybe take on board some thinking that might be prevalent in other SOs and ACs at the front end rather than waiting to post hoc coordinate with them and find out that they may or may not like what we've come up with. So I'll just stop there for now.
Thanks, Bill. So we will defer the motion as requested, which doesn't mean that we can't carry on discussing the topic now. And I agree that, I mean, I'd ask some questions on the list when the group published its document, and it's clear that with Jonathan not present, it may be more difficult to have the discussion that we intended to have. So we'll defer the motion, but Alan had a point that he wanted to make.
Thank you. I guess I'm reiterating what Bill has said, but I'll add a little bit more to it, which I think changes the picture a bit. And I admit I was on the group, and this was not an item that I was successful in convincing the rest of the group to do. I believe that the multiple charter issue, although I don't think multiple charters at the start of a cross-community working group are very likely, I think that there are situations where they may be possible and practical. There are others where it would be deadly. but I think that any principles that we state to begin with should go into it with some level of flexibility. So words like if possible or generally, I think, would cover that. I'll specifically mention that these are principles which later on, for any given cross-community working group, the GNSO would have to approve the specific charter. If the GNSO felt at that time that multiple charters for a given group was a bad item, it could simply refuse to participate in a cross-community working group if multiple charters are there. So we are taking an option away from some future GNSO, largely driven by the experience with JAS, the only case where there has ever been multiple charters and which actually ended up being very successful, with the GNSO not objecting to the items that were added by the ALAC in its version of the charter. So I think this is an overreaction to something that happened. It's visceral. I think it's taking away flexibility from some future council, and there's no real reason to it, because any future council can veto multiple charters if it feels they're inappropriate at the given time. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Any further points on this? Wendy?
I'll speak up as another member of the group who supported the single charter requirement. I think because the charter is the document that tells everybody else outside of what they need to pay attention to and what they are bound by when the group concludes, or at least bound to have participated in, you know, this is your chance to talk about these issues. I think it's appropriate and helpful in the management among all groups for there to be a single charter. In responding to some of the other questions that I saw around, this is not, I don't think, the GNSO Council trying to impose its views on everybody else. The idea is for this cross-community working groups to be collaborative, and their input into what goes into that single charter is as valid as what GNSO members put in. It's just once the group is chartered, there should be a single agreed-upon scope for it.
Thanks, Wendy. And I'll try not to draw any attention to the fact that on the chat, you and Jeff seem to be agreeing with each other a lot today. But any further questions on this? Hearing none, the motion having been deferred, we will move on to the next agenda item. And we're back looking at the IRTP Part B, this time Recommendation 7. And let's try and make some time here. Marika, you have an update on this Recommendation 7 of the IRTP Part B Working Group on specifically on the requirement to lock a domain after a UDRP.
Yes, this is Marika, and I can definitely catch up on some time here, because basically a call for volunteers went out, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and on the screen you'll see the members that have signed up to date. You can see that there are some constituency stakeholder groups that are not represented, so if there is still interest, you know, please feel free to share that call for volunteers again with your membership and encourage people to sign up. We hope to have a first meeting with the drafting team next week. To that end, I've already provided them with the charter template based on the new GNSO working group guidelines. The staff has developed a template that should make it easier for drafting teams to develop charters, as it basically highlights which elements are required and already pre-populate some of the elements that, you know, are part of the GNSO working group guidelines and are standard for every working group. So, you know, following a first meeting, we need to assess how much time it will take to, you know, come up with the charter, and then it should be submitted to the council for its consideration in due time.
Okay. Thanks. Does anyone have any comments or questions for Marika at this time?
And this is Marika, if I can maybe just add, if there is any further guidance the council wants to give to this drafting team, because what I've done is basically I've collected the information from the IRTP BART-B recommendation and the report that relates to the specific recommendation, as well as some of the elements that were included in the UDRP issue report relating to this item. But if there's any other specific guidance that the council wants to give to this drafting team on, you know, the subject matter, you know.
Yeah, we can hear you, Marika. There's a noise in the background. But have you finished?
Yes, I have.
Right. I wasn't sure that you were still on, sorry, because of that noise. Okay. Does anyone want to ask any questions or make any comments? It doesn't appear so. I will thank you, Marika, for that presentation and move on to item 8. We are looking at the Outreach Task Force Charter once again. This has been the topic of discussions amongst this group for a few weeks now, and we have had some motions that we've not reached agreement on as a way of trying to move this forward. The leadership team has suggested that we rediscuss during our weekend sessions, and I believe, Wolf, I haven't got the schedule in front of me, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you've set aside a slot for doing that, which is the first one on the Saturday morning, but we'll be looking at that later. I hope I'm speaking from memory, so I hope I'm not wrong. In order to set ourselves up for that discussion, I've asked Liz to update us on the very latest on this so that we can all go into that conversation with this fresh in our minds and able to possibly look at a way forward. So Liz, if you will.
Thank you, Stefan. It's Liz, and I'm substituting for Julie today. I'm just going to quickly go through a few slides that you should see on your screen. Just the background, you may recall that in July 2008, the board approved the GNSO Improvements Recommendations Report, which included a directive related to outreach, which was to develop global outreach programs aimed at both increasing participation in constituencies and in the GNSO policy process. So subsequently, the council formed the Operations Steering Committee, which directed the CSG work team to develop an outreach program as well as, you know, other responsibilities. Over the course of the year in 2011, the OSD sent to the council recommendations for a global outreach program and task force. The council asked staff to convene a charter drafting team. That charter drafting team presented a charter to the GNSO council along with motion to approve, which was then deferred. In November, the motion was defeated. There was a new motion submitted by the commercial and business constituency, but that has not been seconded, and and no action has been taken. But we still do have a collective responsibility with regard to the board recommendation, the Board Governance Committee Working Group Report, the GNSO Improvements Report that the board approved. So while there are no new motions at present, there's still the notion that at least the board would expect some activity on this at some future time. And so the next steps, as Stefan says, would be subsequent discussion. And hopefully this is useful background for that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Liz. Jeff.
Yeah, can I just, as I'm making my comment, can you go back to that first slide? Because the comment I think I have is that, well, sorry, not that one. didn't the board governance, so what they said was that the GNSO should work on this outreach effort, not necessarily the GNSO council. And I think what we're seeing is that there's no agreement within the council at this point that this is necessarily a council issue. So I don't want to make it sound like
it's the GNSL community is not addressing this issue, nor does the GNSL community think this is important. In fact, if I understood the business constituency's motion last time, which wasn't seconded, or their point, which is that the GNSL community is engaging in outreach, they're just doing it at the constituency level as opposed to the council level. I'd like to hear from the rest of the council to see whether we feel like, simply because the Board Governance Committee had made a motion in 2008, whether this is really something we need to keep addressing over and over again as a council, or whether this is something we as a council just send a message to the constituencies and say, hey, this is still out there. Do you guys have activities that you want to engage in or recommendations, and leave that to the constituency level?
Thanks, Jeff. I would add to that that my understanding is that it's not because we've had a request from the Board Governance Committee that dates a while back, as you've just mentioned, that we absolutely have to provide an answer. If we are unable to provide an answer, then that's our answer. I would expect that to be an acceptable answer. It's happened before on other policy matters. It's happened on other initiatives, so I don't see why it couldn't happen here. But I also understand the point that you're making, that this could be devolved to, sent to the individual GNSO groups. Maybe they want to comment, and maybe they have specific things they want to say. Bill.
Thanks. Well, in response to Jeff, I guess, the outreach task force, if one favors that kind of a framework, is, of course, something that the council would have to vote to adopt. And the question is whether one views that as a useful construct. And we've said before that we did, NCSG, but obviously that was not a consensus position. But obviously I think it needs more discussion. I don't think the arguments for the relative merits of doing some sort of coordination at the level of the GNSO generally through something like an OTF versus just doing stuff at the level of stakeholder groups has really been joined in a kind of broad way. I don't think there's been a real discussion. Most people were not really actively engaged in the outreach working group and so on, and probably weren't following the arguments that were put forward, et cetera. So I just think it would be useful for us to have that conversation. There's another complexity as well, which is, and this has been raised by a number of people, there's some other initiatives going on within ICANN, apparently at the level of the SOAC chairs with the staff and so on, related to outreach. And a number of people in NCSG have been puzzled by that because, for one thing, we've been unable to get any documents to find out what the discussion is and how that's going. So that makes it a little bit hard for us to understand how whatever is done in the GNSO at whichever level fits into the larger picture. So I hope that before San Jose we can get greater clarity about what's being done across the board in different parts of ICANN so that we can think in a little bit more coherent manner about how anything we might do would articulate with it. So for me, I hope that we can have that conversation in San Jose in a useful way.
Thanks, Bill. Sorry, I'm having problems coming off mute today. Wolf.
Yeah, thank you, Stefan. Yes, I let me say agree to all of this, because and this is why it is necessary well to discuss this and to speak about that those things which are unspoken. So that means there is came up in 2008. You know, when the process was started. That was, I remember very well, because that was when I also started to cooperate on GNSO levels. So, and I remember very well all the other things as well. The other improvements projects have been dealt with in the same way as it was with the OTF charter. So the council had something to do on with that. Also, I also agree that in between we have changed the council, and each council has responsibility for that what he is doing at the time he has been established right now. But all this has to be discussed, and that's the goal, to discuss it, to put it on the table in San Jose and discuss about that, and discuss also the responsibilities of the council versus responsibilities of the GNSO stakeholder groups constituencies. So it is very clear that we have to do this in order to avoid misunderstandings and mistrust, I would say, also for the future. So that's the only thing why I put it on the table, and I'm very much looking forward to discuss that and hope that we can go forward in a good way. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolf. Just one thing I didn't understand. When you say it's very clear to me, we must do this. What's this? Discuss in San Jose, or is it another this?
No, this in San Jose. Discuss in San Jose.
Thank you. Sorry, I wasn't clear on that. Thanks. Alan.
Yeah, thank you. I'll call attention to a comment Liz made in the chat saying it's not the board governance rule that we're following here, but a decision made by council several years ago. So at this point, council has to take some action to honor its previous commitment, and that may be to reverse the commitment and say no more outreach is necessary. And I say this as someone who advocates strong proactive outreach, but regardless, council needs to put a current stake in the ground of saying how it's going to handle it, even if it is to reverse the decision taken in 2008. There's plenty of precedent for boards and council reversing decisions, but one way or another, it needs to put a stake in the ground as to how this is going to be responded, how the original requirement is going to be responded to. Thank you.
Alan, thanks. I agree that something needs to be done. I just would reiterate my earlier point that one answer is there is no answer. That is a possible answer. I don't think it's either approve or reverse the previous decision, although I appreciate yours and Liz's explanation on the history of this, because we don't want to miss that. Rafiq?
Thanks, Stefan. Just that I think it's really good to remember the dates when all this work started. So I saw it's basically started at the OSC in January 2009. So it's 3 years ago. And there was, as Anand said, some commitment from the GNSO Council about outreach for the GNSO Council extracting. I think that's really bad precedent that to go backward just because people don't like the outcome. It takes something that they did. Thank you.
I don't know what's going on there, Rafiq, but I'm worried.
Okay. How to say, I think it's this precedent that we don't reach the commitment that we agreed even it's long time ago. I was not on the council 2009, but we have to keep that commitment and to reach what's set as a goal. People worked hard for more, like during 2 years to have outcome. It goes through the council many times. The council sent the questions. There was comment, etc. I think it's not really fair that we go back at the late stage. I can understand that there is some concerns, but why now? That's the question that really I don't find any convincing answer to it. So maybe if we can find a way in San Jose to work on that, but I heard from Wolf about mistrust. it's important to build the trust, but let's, show some goodwill from each every side. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rafiq. Mary is next.
Thanks, Stefan. So I agree with a lot of the comments that have just been made by various colleagues. I do think that it's unfortunate that 3 years down the road, we're still talking about it and nothing's happened. And I also think that it's very important that we make a decision that something either happens or that it doesn't happen. So I'd like us to focus on what is the most effective and efficient way to get us there. It may be, and I think we ought to keep discussing the issue in Costa Rica, but it may be worth looking at the council forming a small team, either of councillors or comprising councillors, representatives from all the groups, including those that might have been on the OTF, with a very clear deadline that in view of two things. One, perhaps some new developments that have emerged in the last 3 years. Second, the concerns, mistrust, and issues that have been raised and come up by a date certain with a recommendation or various options for the council to vote on and either move forward or not move forward. I do think we need to bring this to a close.
Thank you very much. And Yoav is next. Mary, Rafiq, yes, no, yeah. Your hands are down. Rafiq, did you have another point? No, okay, thanks. Sorry, Yoav, please.
Yeah, I've said that before, and I keep hearing the same thing again and again, is that because people did a lot of work and were on a working group and came with different recommendations, the council couldn't just say no. And I just, as a principle, I really disagree with that. And I think that we're not here just to stamp working groups' recommendations. I think, first of all, things change. The fact that that's one of the problems in our in the policy process that we have, that sometimes it takes a lot of time, and people change. So you have different councillors, different councils. There were changes in the market. There were people, different people. In maybe in the constituencies back then, whatever. And actually, even on the outreach, I think that with in practice, if you look at it, you know, how many people over the world heard about what ICANN does 3 years ago. Now with the new GTLDs, more people know about it, that's for sure, know about ICANN and other things, maybe not on all the things that we want, but more people know about it, and maybe that's that can conclude with more people taking part in the ICANN process. I don't know. But bottom line, I'm going back to the principle. I really disagree with that notion that we can't say no for something. And I'm okay. I really think what Stefan said about there are cases where there is no answer. It's okay, and nothing happened. So that's. I just wanted to state that again. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Yoav. Bill.
Just on the last point, I don't think I would insist either that simply because a group worked on something that therefore there's an obligation to do it. But there is, I think, an obligation at least to have a probing discussion about the merits of what the group put forward. We've not really had a collective discussion around the OTF model in any kind of coherent way. We had a process where people put something forward. Nobody was arguing against it. It seemed unproblematic. And then suddenly at the 12th hour, it was no good. And we didn't really get a very clear understanding of exactly why it was no good. So that's all. I mean, I think it's just a matter of due process and being respectful to the time of the people who participated in the effort to at least, if we're going to put something aside, make an affirmative and informed judgment to do so after having considered it properly, and I don't think we've actually done that yet. So that's why, again, I would suggest that we have that conversation.
Thanks, Bill. Rafiq.
Just I want to answer to Yuval, listening to his comment. If I understand well, so we can take time, but we can say no later. So what I can conclude that we have the best recipe to not do anything in the agenda. So just let's take time for any project, for any working group, for anything, and then we can, oh, no, we cannot go ahead, and let's go backward, and then we have the same issue lasting for a long time. We don't find solution, and then that's why maybe people don't hear anything or understand anything about ICANN, because we take so much time. It's not because the problem of consensus, but the problem that we have some people who don't want to go forward. We need to find a solution. We say that we need to find some answer to the outreach problem. Some people work it. People from all constituency and stakeholder group, and all constituency and stakeholder group have time to comment, and they comment for a long time. And these go through many times through the GNSO Council. So I think we have enough time for the community to comment and to be involved. So at the end, the GNSO Council is not here to micromanage the work of the community, but to help the community to work, to define policy, and also to provide enough recommendation to let stuff go ahead. Thanks.
Thanks, Rafiq. Your comments, I'm tempted to react, but I won't. Yoav.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say two more things. I'll try to keep short. One, just to clarify, I have no problem with having the discussion. That's okay. I was just talking about the general idea of the fact that if a working group brings us a recommendation, we as council can decide different than those recommendations and not accept them. And Rafiq, to what you were saying, I'm the last one, and believe me, the one reason that I'm here on this council is that I don't like the fact that things take so long at ICANN. You may haven't heard me in other cases in ICANN, but I'm one of those that were pushing IDNs since 2000, and we just came out with them now in the new GTLDs in 2011. So I'm the last one that wants things to continue in this way. But I'm just saying that okay, it's an initiative that was on a working group, came with a solution that is not accepted by the council. That doesn't mean that it's not the council, you know, the fact that the work was done, and don't get me wrong, I appreciate the work that was done, but we as a council in one of our previous meetings decided not to accept those recommendations. I'm okay with reconsidering it and talking about it in Costa Rica. I don't have anything against that. I'm just talking about the general notion that we can decide different than the working groups. That's it.
Thanks, Yad. Because I can't ever help myself from making comments, I will make one. But a personal comment to what you were saying, Rafiq, I don't think it's fair to say that I understand your frustrations. We've all felt them at some level on some discussions. I just think personally, as a volunteer, who's put in a lot of time into the ICANN process, that we should be careful to remember that this is what we call the bottom-up consensus-driven process. And sometimes those discussions will take time, and we will take the time to make sure that everyone's views are heard and that consensus can evolve from that. It is frustrating, I agree, at times, but I don't think we should characterize the council as just refusing to do anything and standing still, because I don't think that's fair to any of us. But there we go. And that was a personal comment. Zahid.
Stefan, Zahid has been disconnected. I'll make sure that we call back to him.
Yes.
Okay, and then we'll go to Mary and come back to Zahid.
Okay, thanks, Stefan. So I'd like to just follow up on what I said earlier and picking up on Bill's point in the chat. My recollection was similar, that even though we voted against the motion, that there was some sense that there ought to be continuing discussions and that a new motion might be forthcoming, but definitely that more time was needed. So I really think that the discussions that we as a council or we as a council with the committee would have in San Jose needs to have some deliverables. And it may be, I'd like us all to consider that between now and then we've got a bit of time, but that those discussions, you know, frankly, it could be the equivalent of locking representatives of the groups in a room until they come out, and they can come out either with a motion, competing motions, or even a statement that the council could read. And the statement could be something like what you have said, that there's no consensus, we're not going to do anything, or something like that. But I do think we need to have a date, and we do need to take action, even if that action is declaring that no action is going to be taken. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard, at least for some of us, to explain it to the community, given that outreach is such an important issue, not just, you know, within the GNSO, but, you know, broadly speaking across the community and specifically with the new GTLDs. There's a whole bunch of things here. I really think we need to set a date and have a deliverable.
Thank you, Mary. So let's go back to Zahid, if you're online now. Zahid?
Thank you. Yeah, just 2 points. I mean, on the outreach issue, just following up what Mary said, I think our only issue within the BC and some others has been that we're concerned about the fact that, you know, what does this mean for individual constituencies' outreach? Does that hinder it? Does that reduce the resource available to them? And that's the only issue. And there may be other concerns out there, but I would feel comfortable if in a motion something of that nature, a safeguard was put in. And that's basically all I have to say about that. On an earlier point just made that, you know, we as a council and the role of the council is just we can reject whatever's come up from the working group process. I think, you know, it's every different council call meetings, et cetera, that I attend, this pendulum swings one way and then back another, because initially, I think from the restructuring perspective, we were supposed to be policy managers and not policy, you know, makers. So if we're going to have people devote hundreds of hours of time in working groups, those working groups are going to come up with maybe consensus. Driven proposals, which come up to our, you know, come up to the council, it's going to be very difficult for us to just completely outright reject them, because, you know, we're not a policy-making body, from what I understand. I wish we were. I mean, I don't completely agree with all the different changes made in the restructuring of the GNSO, but our role is restrictive management. So, you know, we need to sort of strike a balance there. If the intention of the restructuring was just for us to be managers, it's difficult for us to maintain the proposition that we can do whatever we want despite whatever comes up from the working groups, because the community is going to be quite upset. They're just going to say, if we spend hundreds of hours, what's the point if all of it can be simply ignored and rejected? And this is something I've said about other aspects as well, not just this one. So I think we need to sort of at some stage discuss what exactly are we supposed to do. Are we managers or policymakers? Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Zahid.
Thank you, Stefan. So may I just ask all of you, that we postpone this discussion to San Jose, because it was just a triggering today, and we all understand that there is a must to discuss all these points, and so that we have the very last 10 minutes right now to discuss the San Jose agenda, and you will see that we have left space for, I think, at least 1 hour for this discussion about the OTF, and it would be very helpful. And I would like to prepare that for the discussion in San Jose, and so I hope that we can have a very fruitful discussion there again.
Thanks. Well, we'll do just that and move on to item 9, who is accessibility item, and we have Wendy is council liaison to the group that is looking at this. So perhaps, Wendy, just to go into this quickly and try and make up as much time as we can, you can just do you want to just give us an overview of that response, or is there anything you want to tell us on that?
Sure. Thank you, Stefan, and I think I can do this in under 20 minutes allotted. Very briefly, the WHOIS survey working group has been working on surveying the technical requirements that community members see in the WHOIS. And so in response to the council's request, we considered the request that we look at, that the group look at WHOIS accessibility and returned the conclusion that that was a policy matter rather than the technical matters that we should be focusing on. And given the chartering of this group to focus on technical functionality of the service, we thought that this group was not the appropriate place to add questions about WHOIS accessibility. We note that there are several other places where WHOIS is currently being discussed, including in the council's discussions of the WHOIS review team report, currently out for public comment, as one place where that those questions can be addressed. And there are other discussions of WHOIS in the context of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, but as a policy matter, it wasn't, the group didn't feel it was appropriate for us to comment there. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, sorry, it's my getting off mute problem again. Any discussion on this, please? This is something that another point of that we'll have to take some decision on at some point. Okay, well, perhaps we will look at this again during the San Jose weekend session. And perfect transition there to that. Sorry, Wendy, please go ahead.
I just didn't want to close without giving thanks to Liz Gaster and Barry Cobb for their help in supporting the group and in preparing the document that you have in the Adobe Connect that lists the other places where is currently being considered.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. So let's move quickly on because we're running out of time to Wolf's AOB item. I'm told that, Bill, you have an AOB item, but I've missed it. So I'm trying to find it in the chat. Perhaps you can just tell me what it is.
Right now?
What was it you wanted to discuss?
We NCFG people would like to raise again the question of whether it's not possible that there be transcripts of the GNSL council meetings.
I believe there are now at every meeting.
Yes.
I thought there were not. I thought we had this whole.
Yeah, we have.
Okay, then I stand corrected, and we stand corrected, and we'll go look for them. Bye.
That's no problem. Just to explain, because we did have a discussion, and it's sometimes hard to follow email discussions. I was under the impression that there wasn't, and indeed there wasn't for our teleconferences. It was not the norm. There was a request. I forget. I think it was Wolf or someone else who requested. We looked at it. It was possible to do it, and it's been done for the last, Glenn, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, two or three meetings.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, Stefan.
Yeah.
I'll send you the links, Bill.
Thanks, Glenn. So those are available, Bill. And thanks for bringing that up because I'm sure others have missed it as well. Wolf, over to you, please.
Yes. Thank you, Stefan. Just briefly, I've sent it to you this morning, the draft agenda for the GNSO sessions in Costa Rica. And let me just highlight some things. So it is... as usual, we have discussions, we have reports from the different working teams and discussions about that. And so this is what is on the agenda. And then we have also the good thing is, so we have planned on Saturday to start at 10 o'clock only in the morning to give people who arrive early in the morning a chance, well, also to participate from the beginning. And then we have different updates from the different working teams on Saturday. And what we did is there are additional working teams, as you can see, on Saturday at the end. Saturday is scheduled at the end. So, for example, the DSSA working team, Fake Renewal working team, we're of the opinion that it would be more useful to give those teams a chance to be presented at the public council meeting. So that's our proposal, though, to put it on the agenda of the public council meeting, as well as we did with the Who Is update. But today I have learned as well from the discussion about the Who Is team that it would be useful to have a separate point, a separate item during the weekend session and discussion with that, together with that team, to talk about their recommendations. So I'm going to try to insert that into the agenda. The Saturday seems to be not too many items, but they are heavy items, and they are useful to be discussed. The first one seems to be very useful also in particular, since the council has been, since in Costa Rica many members changed in the council, that we give an introduction to the new PDP and discuss also the experiences so far with it. And the new GTLD program is on the spot there, and we have given place a big space for 3 hours to that. And I think it's also very useful to discuss it, and very interesting, well, to hear from ICANN and from others, well, what's going on with the opening of the window for the application. Then board and GAC meetings are in the afternoon, the joint meetings with board and GAC. And we are still discussing here in the council leadership whether, because I put one point after the board and GAC meeting, it's a kind of wrap-up from the council to come together again to wrap up the board and the council and the GAC meetings. I'm of the opinion in this case that if I remember the last time, there were really, really important issues which have been discussed during with the board and the GAC. Just to recall the RAA and others. So that might be useful directly come together after that and update ourselves and to wrap up ourselves with that, not only to put it on the agenda of the wrap-up session later on the week on Thursday. But, you know, it's just a proposal from my side. So I would like to hear from you, also your input. In addition, what I'm really requesting you is for input for the joint meetings with the board and with the GAC and with the CCNSO, that we could prepare an agenda for those meetings as well. Did I miss anything so far? No, not yet. So I would invite you for comments. Thanks. Oh, I see Jeff is first, and then Mary.
Thanks, Wolf. And thanks for doing this and putting it out there. I think, and I was certainly guilty of this at the last meeting as well, with the way I set it up, I think we've kind of moved away from what the weekend session used to be. It used to be a working session as opposed to just a bunch of updates. I think what showed last time at the GAC meeting and the time before that at the board meeting is that we were woefully unprepared for what had happened during those meetings, that there were such little discussion on the substance that we knew would come up at the GAC meeting or the board meeting because we spent so much time on updates. I would propose, first of all, that anything that's just an update, that there's no actual action item or working item at that point, that we should just get that submitted in writing from the groups and not necessarily do an update. I think we can eliminate a lot of the stuff without having a half-hour update. I think as much as I am involved and the company is involved and other ETLDs, I think there's no real reason at this point to schedule more than a half hour or an hour on new GTLDs. I don't think it's fair for ICANN staff to give us, the council, an update that it wouldn't give to the rest of the community. And I don't think they're in a position during the RFP period to actually give the council any insight that it couldn't give the entire community. And therefore, I think the discussion, as we've heard, is going to be very limited, certainly not 3 hours worth. I think we need a lot more time on the IOC Red Cross issue because the GAC is going to want to discuss that and come to resolution. So we need much more time than a half-hour update. I think it actually needs to be a working session and maybe up to 2 hours because the GAC is going to really want to discuss that. I think we really need to have a lot of discussion on the and Mason's going to kill me on this, but on the RAA stuff so that we as a council can look like we're unified in how we go into the GAC. I think what happened at the last meeting was pretty much atrocious, that we had council members discuss things during the GAC meeting that they wouldn't or didn't discuss during the GNSO session. I think that should never happen. I don't think the GNSO council members should use the GAC meeting as a time period to bring up new things that haven't been discussed. It's okay to have a difference of opinion and discuss that during the GAC, but it's not okay, in my view, to surprise the rest of the GNSO Council with your comments. So I think that we really need to spend more time working on the issues, especially on the issues we know that are going to be brought up with the GAC and the board.
Jeff, some very powerful arguments there. May I ask that as an exceptional measure on this, but so that we act on something that I'm sure most of us agree with in terms of preparing for the weekend session, that tell me if you don't have time to do this, because we do a rota for this, but could you work directly with Wolf? Because what you've just suggested is a major rethink of the way the weekend's just been drafted by Wolf. I think it would be very useful. I agree with everything that you've just said. I think if we can get in more direct council working time and preparation time, then that will be beneficial to us. And I do think that we suffered from lack of preparation in where were we last time? Senegal. And that showed. So could I ask for you to help Wolf? Is that something that you could do?
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yes, thank you
very much.
Yes, thanks.
Thanks to you both. Margie, and I'll ask you all to, Margie, Mary, please keep your comments very short. We're already over time.
Thank you, Stefan. It's Margie. I wanted to echo what Jeff said, specifically with regards to the RAA. We will have a final issue report published by then, and it's going to be very active discussion item, you know, throughout the week. So that's just, that's all I wanted to say, that probably is something that needs to be covered during the weekend session.
Thank you very much, Margie. Mary's taken her hand down. Any other comments? Hearing, seeing none, I will apologize to you for being 5 minutes over time, but I think the discussion was very useful. I will thank you all for your participation, council and staff and community members that have helped us today, and speak to you all next time. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Stefan.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye.